Enterprise Influencers, perspectives from technology leaders. Hello and welcome to Enterprise Influencers, where we speak to people in a variety of industries and get their perspectives on technology leaders. Today's technology leader is Chris Hines from Helient Systems. And as ever, I have my co-host Patrick Falgu with me as well. Patrick, tell us a bit more about what we're talking about today.
Yeah, hey, Chris. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate you being. So today we're going to be talking about technology trends in the legal industry. Probably not everybody's first choice. And when you think about lawyers, like I typically try to avoid lawyers at all costs. I've found them to be expensive and lifestyle inhibiting, but many people work in the legal industry and there's some interesting trends in technology there. So we have our guest, Chris Hines. Chris Hines is a friend of mine, a former boss and co-worker in our history. You can look us up on LinkedIn and see where the overlap is, but Chris is a managing director at Helient Systems, which is a professional services organization really laser focused on the legal industry. And yeah, we're excited to have Chris here and get into the topic here. So Chris, I've known you for quite a while, but introduce yourself to the audience here and tell us a bit about yourself and about Helient Systems.
Sure. Thanks, Patrick. Thanks for having me. Nice to meet you as well, Giles. Yeah, I lead the Microsoft business at Helient Systems. We're based out of Philadelphia. We're a full service firm to law firms. We almost entirely work with law firms and have served that industry for the whole history of the company. We're pretty diverse across everything that a law firm would need. We technically cover everything from infrastructure, productivity, networking, document management. And what's actually been new to me is the desktop. I've a kind of long history as a Microsoft partner and working in the Microsoft ecosystem, but the desktop since joining Helient was new to me. But good for me, Helient's got a long background in virtual desktop and delivering those kind of projects. So we're really leading the charge to the Microsoft cloud for legal. I'll say just generally, I think legal is definitely behind the enterprise. Prior to Helient, I spent 10 years in the enterprise, Patrick, where you and I met, and we did some of the first migrations to Microsoft 365. And for my sins back in the day, I was a SharePoint developer and did a lot of work with that. But yeah, really 10 years ago, legal was very resistant to the cloud. And we could get into some of the reasons behind that. But really now today, here in 2022, Helient is very busy helping this industry modernize, move to the cloud. And really it's our vision and we're well on our way to that vision to be the go-to partner for Microsoft to get these law firms to the cloud. And really that's our mission. That's what we get up and do every day. And we want to deliver that. And our vision statement is to be modern, secure, available, and agile. We're a Microsoft Gold partner, and that's a big part of our growth here and helping the industry.
Awesome. Yeah, it's funny. There seems to be a recurring theme on the podcast here of former SharePoint developers, myself, Giles included, guilty, yourself included, and some of our other guests that we've talked about our sins of the past. I want to, so focusing on the legal industry, and when I think of the legal industry, right, I think of somebody's fancy law library with their leather chairs and couches like the one behind you there, and my rich mahogany and many leather-bound books. And you think of somebody maybe in their smoking jacket leafing through a legal journal. But let's talk a little about perception versus reality in the legal industry, because law, like anything, it's professional services. And as such, there is a need to deliver, right? There's a need to be efficient. There's a need to be a good steward of our customers or our clients' money and time and resources. Can we talk a little bit about the perception versus reality of the state of legal technology?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I think that's a great question, because for sure, there definitely is some oak paneling in the offices that I get to visit. And that's interesting. And I've always enjoyed throughout my whole career, really learning about different industries and to try and imagine walking in the shoes of a customer for a period of time. And I had the fortune of working across industries, definitely now including legal. But yeah, there's definitely some of that. But also what I see, and we reflect this ourselves at Helient, we're a very modern company. We're very agile. We're about 50 people in the US, and independently owned and so forth. So we have a lot of autonomy and agility to respond to changes. And so directionally, really, the adoption of the cloud, we've asserted, is the right direction for the industry. For me, I spent 10 years in the enterprise helping really large corporations adopt M365 and more latterly move their infrastructure and solutions to Azure. For legal now, that's just becoming an imperative. And there are several things, I think, driving that. Like for everybody, I think the pandemic was a kind of huge shift in the needs of the firm. And if you imagine, really, you have, depending on the size of the firm, of course, from a few dozen to a couple of thousand, highly productive individuals working very hard in that kind of productivity suite. As you imagine, their expectations are very high and their productivity is essentially what a law firm does. So I've always felt like saving 10 minutes of an attorney's day is a really important thing to think about. Certainly the pandemic was a kind of big shift, I think, in how law firms needed to respond and everybody else overnight needed to have a solution, and found very quickly kind of on-premises infrastructure, although it could have been very good on-prem, suddenly was very difficult to work in a kind of remote scenario. But then also, he is a big driver as well. Historically, I would say that law firms like maybe had like a perimeter security kind of mindset, where if we just keep the perimeter really strong, we can afford to have more of a soft center from that perspective. And really now, just going back to the imperative and where we are at in 2022, we have to modernize. We have to adopt the new security features that are only available and possible in the cloud. Being a Microsoft partner, of course, we go to those features. But just generally speaking, it's now an imperative from a security point of view, but we do it. And then I think finally, the kind of other big kind of shoe to fall really has been the total cost of ownership. It is coming down and the cloud is getting way more competitive, traditional on-premises hyper-converged infrastructure. We could talk about a little bit about some of the details there, but I think those are the three kind of main things that are forcing firms to modernize. And going back to the comment about law firms and maybe historically being a little bit set in their ways, we have some amazing progressive customers who have fully embraced this kind of imperative and this cloud vision. And they realize they have to do it, and they have to do it quickly. We're working with those folks and having a lot of fun building some very new modern stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. And now you mentioned that some of them are embracing it, some of them are not embracing it. And you also mentioned that you're starting to lead the way in terms of the approach that legal firms should take into adopting the new technology, which kind of then leads to then maybe there's some kind of maturity model. You're in this place here, and then these are the steps that you go to. Like you think of like cloud maturity models, right? It's like infrastructure, then PaaS, yeah, then SaaS, all of that kind of stuff as well. Legal systems have a lot of important stuff going on, right? So that you have to be able to search for content very easily. You have to be, there's the ability to be able to discover content and things like that as well. What can you tell us about that, and how do you lead customers to the lofty goal of full cloud and automation and things?
Yeah. I think the approach always is, let's get the basics right. Let's get the foundations in the cloud right. The timeline does depend a little bit on the customer's investment in that on-premises architecture. So if they're only 1 year into a large capital investment on-premises, it's going to be difficult to move everything immediately. Probably kind of leads to a good kind of comment about law firms and how they make decisions. And I'll contrast this with the enterprise, because that's been my background. There's a lot of consulting that goes on, generally speaking. Most firms have some kind of technology committee that IT will present to in order to get buy-in and support and approval and ultimately funding to be able to embark on something new. If you did just reinvest in your hyper-converged infrastructure on-prem a year ago, it's unlikely you're going to retire all of that immediately. So we're usually working on some kind of three-year adoption plan. And to speak to the maturity curve there, it really follows. We are absolutely centered in the Microsoft cloud, because we believe that is the correct platform to be on once we get there. It's a highly productivity focused industry. Nothing bad to say about AWS or GP or something, but you want to be integrated and thinking about all of the productivity tools. But yeah, so we're starting with the basics, synchronizing identity and moving email. Of course, that's, we were doing that maybe 10 years ago in the enterprise. Now we're still full bore doing that for law firms, moving their exchange up to the cloud. And from that point, that's the jumping off point to start building out into the other workloads. Of course, collaboration in teams is a big topic as well. We need to marry that with the document management system, which is, Giles, I think, as you pointed out, is the one of the other core systems that, you know, that we would engage with. That's interesting, figuring out like how those will play together, how you will work on matters and collaborate on documents in your DMS alongside working in Teams and chat and collaborating on documents in Microsoft. So I would say that's like second step, like getting to those kind of tools. And then, of course, like the holy grail really in legal is to improve and make service delivery more efficient. I would say that certainly the progressive firms that are looking at that as their future to say, if we modernize and move to the cloud, we could start to improve our service delivery. For sure, that's true, I think, in future, but you've got to put some of these kind of basic building blocks in place and take care of the simple things first, moving exchange and adopting these first workloads in 365.
I can only imagine, like, I remember many times reviewing SOWs and just getting someone to use track changes and store a document up into SharePoint or maybe now Teams, that could be a challenge. Now trying to take a law firm with all the probably various levels of skill from multi-generational, diverse backgrounds and whatnot, and now you're trying to push this change into the cloud. And I can only imagine that like things like training and change management and communications like are uber, uber important to what you do.
They are. I think what's interesting about, you mentioned the attorneys, and they are an inevitable fact of a law firm, and ultimately they're the users that we're serving here. But you'd be surprised. There are some very, very experienced attorneys with technology. Many of our customers, their clients are advanced media and technology companies. Some of the companies that we're talking about here, when they're collaborating with a tech giant in Silicon Valley, you can bet that they already know how to use the tools, and they have the expectations that their firm is going to be able to provide that for them. There's that kind of push for modernization there too as well. And what a firm absolutely needs to avoid, any organization, is any kind of shadow IT going on where an attorney goes off and does their own thing and does something in the public cloud in particular that is not subject to all the security and compliance considerations that a law firm should bring in. So I think that kind of, you know, that push from both directions, I think, is very helpful. And so to answer your question, Patrick, and the trick for those guys, like really they're very, I think, self-sufficient. But you're right. I mean, we're delivering for some firms a very significant change to the end user. I'm working with a firm in DC right now. They're moving from a very legacy architecture, everything on premises, old document management system, VMware and Citrix that leaves something to be desired, all the way up to E5 autopilot controlled laptops and Windows 365, actually, through the full security suite of E5. And all of a sudden, they're going to get all these new tools. And hopefully, that's going to be, for the most part, an enjoyable experience. But you're right, there's a lot of training built into that to keep those folks productive.
Awesome. And the other piece that, just to follow back up on, like you introduced it a bit and maybe soft played it a bit, but a lot of these law firms, I imagine, are partner led organizations. So they're a partnership. You've got the folks at the top sort of making decisions and driving budgetary decisions on what we're going to invest in, what you're going to do. And that obviously drives technology. I guess, are there intricacies in how you like partner with those types of organizations from a consulting services perspective? I can imagine that those are very relational kind of transactions, right? They're built over building trust over a period of time and those sorts of things. Maybe that's the area you could highlight a bit.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'd say you're right. It is interesting kind of how we engage with firms. Fortunate enough that many people I work with here at Helion have had long-term relationships over decades with CIOs and CISOs and IT directors in firms. So there's an inherent amount of trust built in with IT. I think unlike the enterprise, they're still first talking to IT. I think in the enterprise, there is a great drive to not talk to IT, to talk to a CMO, to go to the business and talk to them as much as possible. I would say in legal, maybe this is a reflection of law firms generally being smaller organizations. We're talking from a couple of hundred to a couple of thousand for the most part. Really, IT is our first focus, but very quickly, we are then supporting IT with a discussion with a technology committee or with those partners who are making decisions about the technical direction of the firm. And that's really interesting because we get to stand up at a tech committee and present, in this case, obviously, the Microsoft Cloud and why that is an imperative, what the industry trend is. And that's been a great conversation. You can get into some great depth there as well with folks. I've been up in front of tech committees who have a policy expert, who have a compliance expert. So the moment we start talking about those kind of benefits to be able to be compliant with HIPAA or SOC or anything for the government, they immediately relate to that kind of thing. And it's a good conversation to be presenting a technology which advances the firm's position to be compliant with those kind of things.
So you mentioned something earlier about shadow IT and with the impact of the cloud and it's changing with SaaS and things like that, it keeps those migration projects out of the way, right? You don't have to upgrade your hardware and there's all these really good benefits with SaaS, but it also introduces tools like Power Apps, Power Automate, yeah, and things like that. And although it's in a better situation than, say, Access databases like 10, 15 years ago or whatever, because you've got DR and backup already in place and things like that, how do you see those tools impacting? Does it have the potential to increase that shadow IT? And then I guess the other side, and maybe a more positive side, is because you're joining a joined up cloud of productivity, what are the benefits? So like, when I think of my SharePoint past and e-discovery modules, which then eats into Exchange, and you could probably do something to get it to work into file shares and things like that, and lots of disparate systems, but then you had to start doing modules, open text or whatever it was. Now that we're in a cloud and you choose a cloud like Microsoft, Azure, GCP, or whatever, but let's say Microsoft in this case, everything's joined up together. It's been brought forward to the customers as everything together. Does that help?
Yeah, it sparks a few thoughts, I guess. In regards to the shadow IT piece, obviously we want to be in front of that and we want to be presenting all of the things that you can do to avoid any user kind of being tempted to go down the shadow IT route. I think also you need to prevent inadvertent shadow IT occurring without an attorney, in the circumstance where an attorney thinks that they're operating within their sovereign organization and in fact they're not. Obviously that's a problem. So you want to be in front of that with that early cloud configuration to make sure the boundaries of the organization are set very clearly. And basically that kind of thing can't happen. One of the biggest concerns a law firm should have is data exfiltration, right? Whether that be intentional or inadvertent. And you need to account for both cases, I think. There have been many, unfortunately now, high profile cases of data exfiltration from law firms. I think going way back when to the Panama Papers, which was a very specific law firm based in Panama, but there have been others since. Getting in front of that to make sure that there is no adoption of a productivity tool that would result in data leaving the organization. That's very important. But to speak more to the kind of productivity tools overall, again, I think it's like, how do we provide enough of those tools so that there isn't a temptation to go outside or need to go outside? And as data moves to the cloud and is available in a Microsoft ecosystem, those tools become more usable within the day-to-day experience of a user. So I'll point at the obvious one that we're engaged with, which is moving data to the cloud allows accounting in a law firm to be able to successfully report on that. So the moment you're synchronizing your time and billing data to the cloud and you have some kind of data warehouse, you open up a lot of possibilities for being able to use some of the suite that you mentioned, Giles. Power BI is the kind of lowest hanging fruit there. If you want to convert, you know, all of that kind of legacy SSRS, for my sins, probably also did some a bit too much of that for my liking. But now the capability is, once your data is there and it's secure, you have an opportunity to use those kind of tools in a safe, contained way within a firm.
I imagine that containerization is really important, right? In my limited experience in working with a few legal clients, or at least maybe being involved in some engagements that were tangentially related. But I know that there's a lot of sensitivity towards a random example, but like, you may have a law firm and maybe they're representing Pepsi on one matter and Coca-Cola on another. Those teams probably don't need to be talking. They don't need to be seeing each other's data. They don't need to be related in any way. But then now you're putting everything into the cloud, right? Just a simple slip of permissions, and now things are exposed through search. They're exposed through various other mechanisms potentially, or there are things like Power Automate or other like low code systems that can potentially like access data given permissions are available. But so I guess maybe that governance aspect of the cloud is a really, I imagine, a very key concept that you need to engage with the firms around. I don't know. That just seems like a loaded topic. So
how does it work?
Yeah, how's it work, Chris?
Yeah, I think you're pointing at the right thing. It's really the ethical wall that needs to exist. Any firm taking on a new matter needs to perform a conflicts check to make sure that they have no kind of conflict of interest. And it's very normal, actually quite an interesting process that exists within every firm in one way, shape or form. But really the system that is most important to implement that in is the document management system. Like, that is really where you need to be most concerned about creating these walls, or the kind of ethical wall between, I'll pick randomly two tech giants. If you're working with Microsoft and Google, there needs to be no cross-pollination of those matters. So today, that's one of the reasons I think that we're still working in more traditional DMS solutions. And there are really two big ones. I mean, they are moving to the cloud, so their infrastructure is now moving all up to the cloud. Big one we work with, iManage, they are now deploying all new iManage cloud clients to Azure, and they have a great partnership with Microsoft. So there's some kind of like convergence of that technology to the ecosystem. But importantly, in order to fulfill some of the things that law firms expect, that's really like why they're using a DMS versus SharePoint or some of the things they own.
Yeah, and I guess, and that's a good point, because there's that segmentation of, here's the things we're producing for our customers and the data that we're ingesting from our customers. So we're protecting that with inside of these walled garden of the DMS. But then there's the day-to-day work that you're doing too, which, you know, is your communication portals and your knowledge management, and where things like maybe Viva Topics or other types of cloud-based systems bring in this like machine learning AI panacea of it's going to do everything for everybody, right? Maybe that comes into play again, which I imagine is a hot topic of conversation amongst firms.
Yeah, so I think for that vision, that kind of holy grail of improved service delivery that involves AI and enables firms to automate tasks which are repetitive. Because whilst there are very interesting and very involved law topics or matters, there are also some mundane ones as well that are highly repetitive. So that repetitive is going to be subject to automation. And I think some firms are starting out on that road, but the potential is huge. I think the convergence of, say, like an iManage and a Microsoft here, I mean, they have a partnership and clearly working together. That's the kind of thing eventually I think we're going to be able to get to with the innovation, is that those things will be working nicely together, and we have an unbelievable amount of data to work with. And even a small law firm can generate tens of millions of documents over its lifetime. And that sort of generates a great opportunity, I think, to automate things, to give to ML to be able to build models, to be able to build models from. So yeah, that, I think that's going to get really interesting. But today, I think we're working on the basics to get to the cloud so that those opportunities continue to open up.
Another question that comes up in my mind is, so I love watching legal stuff on TV, right? So the more trivial one is like Suits, right? That obviously ended a few years ago. But when you look at that stuff, right, some crazy case happens and then they go off into a room and then they go into all the filing cabinets, they bring them all out.
Yeah.
And then they pull an all-nighter to try and find the one bit of information they need. Yeah. To be able to win the case. Now, obviously, I'm trivializing that entirely, and I'm sure it's not entirely like that, but I assume that putting everything into the cloud, that's the productivity improvements that you're talking about, right? The ability to easily find content.
Yeah, it's a fascinating area. So really in the area of discovery, right, and what the cloud would enable us to do. And this will only, I think, only exponentially increase a firm's potential, because if you imagine them trying to retrieve that with their infrastructure on-prem to be able to be elastic enough to scale up to support a large case with that level of compute, right? Translate that to today, where overnight you could provision all of that in Azure and allow your discovery tool to expand enormously and use all those resources, right? Answer the question, find the problem, and then scale back down again. I think it's one of the kind of key tenets of cloud adoption that I think's starting to work, but I think will only grow exponentially in terms of what a firm could provision and achieve. Because, right, enable a advanced e-discovery tool, and there are several. There's things built into 365 for basic discovery, but there are other tools as well that could grow very elastically to support a matter, and then importantly scale back. So you know, you're not going to go provision new infrastructure on-prem to support petabytes of data or something, but you could do that in the cloud if you had the right case and wanted to do it.
And probably more importantly to the law firm, you can actually segment those resources so that you justify the cost of them and bill them back to the customer.
Sure. Yeah, of course, it depends on the firm. Some will have internal teams that do that for litigation support in particular. Other firms will work with an external agency. But either way, the use case is right.
It's super
interesting to think that you could ingest an entire organization, say it's a very broad case like an Enron or something originally, you can ingest an entire organization's documents like that and be able to search and find that one thing looking for.
As long as you can ingest them faster than they shred them. Now that is I guess I hadn't really thought of that, but it makes perfect sense, right? We see that in application development and doing these hugely scalable applications, being able to, some of our other episodes, we've talked about infrastructure as code and things like that. So it is absolutely, it makes perfect sense. Why, if I've got iron in the closet and I get a huge case and I've got to go buy a bunch of disk, and especially in today's world where we don't know when we're going to get those resources. They may be stuck on a container ship somewhere. To be able to just spin that up virtually in the cloud in a matter of seconds really is an amazing capability.
Yeah, definitely a game changer. And I think the supply chain kind of shock has been a problem for sure. And folks relying on infrastructure on-prem, unfortunately, they are waiting a long time on new hardware and upgrades. And in addition to the productivity experience during the pandemic, that has been a very real factor, certainly for law firms. And I know outside of legal as well, waiting on hardware is a big problem.
So the Microsoft Cloud is obviously your specialty, right? But obviously, it's not the only cloud. I guess there's a reason you guys chose the Microsoft Cloud, I guess is what I'm getting at, right? So not just your experience, but you must see some value in it that is over and above what other clouds, AWS, GCP, Oracle, whatever, has to offer. So could you expound a little bit upon what specifically about the Microsoft Cloud really gives you the advantage and is why you guys have chosen to really focus there?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So I think there are two main reasons for that. One, and most importantly, it's the right solution for law firms, highly focused on productivity. Really, you're not going to get the productivity tools that you get with a kind of integrated Microsoft cloud experience. And that relationship between M365 and Azure is now baked in. And it's the reason that you want to keep those things in Microsoft. And whilst you could go get cheap storage or you could get cheaper compute sometimes on different kind of competing SKUs, really, you're not going to do that. It's a false economy to try and make that jump. And same for the compliance reasons as well. If you are trying to control your organizational data, which is a big part of Microsoft's vision, you can do that very successfully and relatively easily in the Microsoft cloud. The moment you start adopting other clouds because you found some cheap storage or cheaper compute, I think it just becomes a false economy. Certainly at the scale that we're talking about here for organizations of up to a couple of thousand people. So I think that's the first reason, the most important reason. But also, Microsoft are a great partner. I've had the benefit of working with Microsoft for many years now and done that in the enterprise. And really, they offer the best opportunity to partner as a services organization. So for here and how we look at that, we need the tech giant to be a good partner and be consistent in how we're going to market. And just for, I think for decades now, Microsoft have offered the best opportunity for that. And not to say that the other tech giants aren't pushing to catch up, they definitely are. But it's still the most compelling option for a services partner. And we get the support and sometimes funding for what we need to do to help our customers understand their technology. And it works very well. So why would we look elsewhere?
Yeah. Yeah, no, you make some really good points there. And you know, look, I'm a fanboy, and I'll freely admit it. I make my living in the Microsoft ecosystem. I've been in that ecosystem for quite a while, and while we're trying to be somewhat agnostic in terms of the podcast, but I work and use Microsoft on a day-to-day basis. In my opinion, it's one of the most complete cloud solutions out there, from, because like you mentioned at the top of the episode, right? Like from the desktop all the way through the cloud. Yeah. So everything from like your Windows operating system to the client applications to SharePoint, Teams, telephony, all the stuff. And then you throw Azure in the mix, and now you can run these big DMS systems in the cloud, and you can have these hugely scaled applications.
Yeah.
Like it's a one-stop shop, if you will. Like, now, admittedly, not perfect, right? Stuff happens, things go wrong. Sometimes you like a feature, sometimes you don't. I manage some of these technologies at a very large scale. There's a lot of good there. And I generally find them willing to listen, willing to get on a call and dig in, things like that. And one thing I find with it is that is really unique, in my opinion, and I've admittedly had less interactions with some of the other tech giants, as you described, they really care about your usage. So you're paying your $30 a month or whatever it is per user, but a lot of SaaS companies would say, cool, we've got your money, we're good to go. I've got your money whether you use it or not. But Microsoft seems to be a little bit different there. And I'm wonder like that user adoption element, maybe you can talk a little bit about that, because I think it's a key part of the cloud offering.
Yeah, I agree, Patrick. I mean, it's a key tenet for years now. Microsoft have pushed for the actual adoption, and this is not just a sales activity. This is adoption, usage, and importantly, feedback. And having that extensive partner ecosystem, and we engage with a vertical very specifically. So we're well placed to provide feedback for the industry that we work with. But Microsoft did definitely foster that with the partner advisory councils and the opportunity to provide input from end users' perspective. And you're right, they absolutely monitor that consumption, because they realize that the more people are using, adopting, liking, providing feedback on their tools, the more likely that they're going to stay with that SaaS offering. So I think that's very advanced and very mature, and I think will only continue to support Microsoft. I think it's important to not be complacent about that as well. Maybe you should have on the podcast, you should have some of the Amazon folks as well, because in particular, I do see Amazon trying to mimic what Microsoft have done. So definitely let's not be an echo chamber and kind of...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because what I've seen is a number of old colleagues, some of them leaving the Microsoft ecosystem and going to work at Amazon. And I think that is part of that maturity curve in on the Amazon side. Okay, let's go get some of these folks that are doing this at a high level and bring them in and mature our offerings. And my comments weren't to say that any of the other clouds are more or less mature, but I do think the completeness of the offering that Microsoft has is something that is somewhat unique in the industry.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think for certain specific cases, and there is a case being made for running things on AWS, but I don't understand why would that make sense, unless you're operating at unusual scale and have a very specific down to the last cent requirement to achieve compute or storage at a certain level. Why would you open up the potential that your data lives somewhere else aside from the controls that you have in place? And why would you divert away, particularly in our industry where there's a very strong productivity requirement? Like, why would you try and do that somewhere else as well? It doesn't make sense. But I'm always open-minded about these things. Tell me why. Like, why would you?
Okay. Absolutely.
No, in my experience, I've got some neighbors that work at Amazon in key areas, and I know some of the people that do the Google stuff as well. And they honestly, when I speak to them about it, they basically say they're going after different markets. Yeah. US typically famously went over point of sale stuff initially, areas where Microsoft had an area, but then they failed. So it's, I think we've all seen an ATM with a Windows error message, right? Or things like that, right? And point of sales and things like that with Pocket PC and going wrong and things like that. So I've seen Amazon in the past go that in that direction. And I know that they are big in the kind of gaming kind of back-end server space as well. Yeah. And I see Azure trying to compete in that space, and they don't have the same stronghold that they do have in collaborative technologies, right?
Yeah, and so I've certainly seen in the high end of custom development serving the retail industry a huge scale. There are some compelling cases in there, but yeah, you've got to know which industry you're in and what you're focused on achieving if you're an end user. And that may make sense for those types of solutions, but I would say generally speaking, certainly for really any law firm or folks I'm working with right now, it's a false economy, I think.
Yeah, I think what we've successfully done is exposed our bias towards Microsoft.
Reaffirmed our commitment to the board.
And there's the consulting salesman at work. We've reaffirmed our commitment. Chris, I think this has been, we're reaching the end of our time here, but this has been a really interesting conversation to me. Certainly highlighted some areas that really I hadn't thought about before. It's really, I think, some cool stuff going on. And I never thought I would say that about the legal industry, but it really is. And so I want to give you an opportunity to just tell us, how can we, if there's some legal partners out there that are starting a firm or they're well established, how do they get a hold of you? You know, tell them how they can get in touch so that they can do business with you guys and get to the cloud.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Patrick and Giles. It's been really interesting talking to you and great questions. And I really enjoy the long format discussion. It's really an opportunity to get to the things that are interesting. But yeah, I'd love to hear from anybody who'd like to work with Heliant. You can contact us, sales@heliant.com. I'll make a quick shout out to my colleague, Bill Anstock, affectionately known as Billy from Philly. He's our sales director, and we'll be very happy to talk to you if you'd like to learn more about Heliant and how we help law firms modernize for the Microsoft cloud. You can also go to our website, helium.com.
Awesome. And I warned you before, at the top of the episode, before we started recording, that we would ask you to share with our audience, our listening audience, some sort of fun fact or antidote about Chris Hines. So you've had now 45 minutes or so to prepare yourself. So Chris Hines, what is your fun fact?
I guess, Patrick, I'll go in an unexpected direction. I have a few obvious directions for myself, but my goal is to surprise you. I've lived in the US now for 14 years. It's my home. I love being here. And I just decided that it was time that I learned how to properly smoke meat. So my latest hobby and interest is getting good. And I think, Giles, I think I'm talking to now a Texan and somebody from
Atlanta. Half my neighbors do the same thing. It's a great smell over the weekend.
Yeah, I'm up here in the Northeast smoking meats every weekend on my pellet grill. Don't shoot me down for this. It's a pellet grill. No real fire, but it's a realistic way to start out. But I'm having great fun learning how to smoke briskets and get a good result. And it's been a really fun adventure for me. So that's my fun fact. Guy from the UK originally and figured out how to assimilate and get into meat smoking in America.
Do you plan to have a sign on the side of the road that says brisket sandwich, $5?
I do look up, I see these places. I saw one in Texas the other day. There's some kind of, I think, a magazine that comes out in Texas that talks about the best meat smoking places. And there's a new number one, and it's this like small shop. Is it Goldie or something like that? And I watched their YouTube the other day. It was fascinating. I looked at what they were doing, and it did seem like an awfully good retirement job. So
they're open 2 days a week, and she's 80-something years old, and she's actually – so she's a janitor at the school system and smokes meat on the weekends. So
it's an amazing adventure. Patrick, I know you're into this a little bit. But
A little bit.
It's an amazing adventure. I love the challenge. It's really interesting. And just seeing the results, like when it works out, it's a good feeling.
It's interesting because I can, as a technologist, and I could see where this would be an interesting hobby for you, because it is all about the process, right? It's how you prepare it. You lay the foundation. You know, you've got to get it to the right temperature at the right time, and you're managing your temperature over time, and when do you spritz it, and when do you flip it, and when do you wrap it. It is, and I tend to change things often, and so my results can vary. It's either amazing or you make chili.
One of the best things I have done since moving to the US is I did a, because there's so many of those side of the road places, me and my wife and a couple of friends decided to do a road trip for a weekend, and clearly this was before I had kids, and just travel to those places and then grab a little bit of something to eat just to try it out. Yeah. It was amazing. And honestly, the best barbecue I've ever had is not on the Franklin's and the famous ones, Black's over in Taylor and all that kind of stuff. It's just this random place in the middle of Elgin.
Down
the country road that you would never even know it's there.
But sure, I mean, there's beauty in that. I think I've traveled the world and been to 45 countries or more, and every place I've been, I've always been excited about trying the food. And you're right, there's just so much goodness and tucked away in little corners. And you haven't, I may be misspeaking here, but I don't think you've eaten brisket in New Jersey yet. So in the event that you're here, you can put me on the map.
Excellent. I will be there.
We'll take you up on that, Chris. My friend, thank you so much for joining us today on Enterprise Influencers. And yeah, it's been a fascinating conversation. Giles, take us out.
Yeah, thank you very much. And of course, you can capture all your favorite podcast places, iTunes, Google, all that kind of stuff. And thanks for joining us. Thanks again, everybody. Bye.